Hey guys, my name is Amy Coonan, and I am a millennial on a mission to eat, clean, cook, dress, and live more sustainably. It's because of that that I'm also the host of The Town Hall, Rubicon's first and only podcast where we share sustainability stories from the industry's influencers and the biggest brands. Jam-packed with tips, tricks, and need-to-know info for those that want to do better for the planet but may not know where to start. We are covering it all. Last year, we spoke to some incredible people who are doing some incredible things for our planet. The executive director of the Leonardo DiCaprio Foundation, the CEO of Seven Generation Cleaning Products, and one of the brains behind environmental sustainability in the NBA. This season, we're kicking it up a notch. Don't forget to download and subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or iHeartRadio so that you don't miss a minute. And if you can't catch us on your commute or you don't download directly, don't stress. You can check out our website at rubicon.com/townhallpodcast for recaps, reviews, and all things Town Hall. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Town Hall. Today, I am super excited to be joined by Kate Daly, Managing Director of Closed Loop Partners. She'll explain all about it to us. Kate, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks, Amy. It's great to be here.
So how did you end up working in the circular economy? You know, closed loop is a kind of like a buzzword that we hear a lot in the sustainability industry. Walk me through your career a bit, and where in that timeline do you think you sparked your passion for environmental sustainability?
I would say really since I was a child, even, I've considered myself an environmentalist. I've been a vegetarian since I was 19 when I first read about the impact of deforestation and its link to cattle grazing in South America. And so I think I was a big reader, and I would read things and they'd have a real impact on me. And if you are tuning in and have been for the past several decades, you know, climate change is for me the number one passion and topic that I'm most concerned about. And so I had a winding path to the circular economy. I worked as a historic preservationist for many years, really looking at that type of conservation as related to environmental and sustainability goals, looking at preserving the assets, the buildings that we already have, as opposed to expanding sprawl and new construction. Certainly the greenest building is the one that's already built. And from there, really went into more of an urbanist perspective and worked for the city of New York for more than a decade, first within historic preservation at the Landmarks Commission, and then for their Economic Development Corporation, leading their innovation and job creation for looking at entrepreneurship as one of the main factors in supporting emerging businesses and startups in anchor and emerging industries in New York. And it was there that I first learned about the concept of the circular economy and started to see how I could link that to the work that I was doing in tech, in fashion, in job creation generally, that there's no reason why the hyphen tech industries that were emerging couldn't also link to a sustainability agenda. And circularity started to seem like a tool where I could talk about job creation and economic development within the context of something new, so that it wasn't just seen as, oh, that's green, not sustainability, there's a separate department that handles that, but rather that it's at the core of economic decision making.
So Closed Loop Partners is, you know, at its core, an innovation center for the circular economy. And like you were talking about, it spans across a bunch of different sectors, a lot of stuff that we actually cover on the show, fashion, food, single-use plastics, and of course, you know, technology. What is the core mission behind Closed Loop Partners, and how exactly does the innovation center and the business work?
The core mission of Closed Loop Partners, since it was launched in 2014, has been to advance the transition from our current linear take-make-waste economy to a regenerative one, where resources are kept in play. And we use a lot of tools to accomplish that. And some of that is to support municipalities with their recovery of recyclable materials so that they can financially benefit from recovering and selling those as a commodity. And our innovation center within Closed Loop Partners, the Center for the Circular Economy, is a hub for pre-competitive collaboration. And there I would say that the theory of change is that if we bring together global corporations to send a market signal to stakeholders across the entire value chain on a different way of doing something, on looking at things from a systems level perspective, from a commodity perspective. How do we keep resources in play by making sure that they have a value to every person along the value chain so that they're pulled through the system instead of pushed into a landfill? And we accomplish that by bringing brands together. We work closely with NGOs, with technical subject matter experts to tackle seemingly intractable material challenges like the paper cup that's currently not recycled and composted because of its plastic liner, or the single-use plastic bag. And really looking at it not as how do we replace a plastic bag, but how do we think about the future of retail and look at new ways of getting our goods home that make sense, not just in 2021, but in 2030.
So let's break down one of those sectors for a second. And I do want to talk to you about sustainable fashion. What are some examples of some brands or companies that you think are breathing new life into their products, some companies that are doing a phenomenal job of upcycling and closing the loop on their processes?
Well, we work very closely with Starbucks. And in terms of a large global corporation, I would say they have an incredible appetite, not just for setting ambitious sustainability goals, but linking that to their innovation engine and really looking at all the different tools, whether that's investment in facilities and infrastructure and also in R&D for emerging materials and innovation, and linking that to sustainability goals to reduce the amount of unrecoverable materials that they're using and ensure that those materials, that as they transition to new formats that can be recovered, that the facilities, the sortation, the hauling, and the recovery is there to make sure that they're actually closing the loop. So that's an example of a global brand that I think is walking the walk as well as talking the talk. And then on a smaller scale, I would say that we work closely with a company called El Gramo, and they are a sort of a vending effort where they sell cleaning supplies by the gram. And what's important about that is that you can use a reusable, they have you use reusable containers. So they're eliminating the single-use plastics of single serve. But it's also that customers can get whatever amount of the product they need without having to pay a premium for having a smaller amount, because it's the price is by the gram, no matter how much you get. And so whereas many of us can afford to buy the largest container of something and then get that discount, there's the poverty tax on people who have to buy incremental small amounts. And this shows that sustainability and affordability don't have to be at odds. And I think that for the circular economy, it's incredibly important that we have that as our mantra, that sustainability doesn't preclude affordability.
I love that mantra. And I think that it's important to educate everyone, because I do think that there's not a stigma around sustainability, but there's certainly preconceived notions that if you want things to be clean and green, they're going to be more expensive. What have you found to be some of the more effective marketing initiatives that you guys have used to promote either the businesses you invest in, the businesses that you work with, or just sustainability education in general?
I think that with sustainability education, it is so important to meet people where they are. I personally don't like the phrase consumer behavior change, because it makes it sound like you're talking about people out there who need to change the terrible things they're doing. Whereas that's all of us. We're all consumers, and I think of it more as citizens. And I'm not trying to change our behavior. I think that it's incumbent upon all of us, that we as investors and innovators, the brands, the startups, to offer options that then consumers, citizens, customers can choose from that are the most sustainable choice. We're all downstream of decisions that have been made long ago in terms of what is the packaging, what is the content, what's the carbon footprint of this shirt that we're buying, this food that we're buying. And we have very little control once it's already out in the marketplace. And that's where I think it's incumbent on the producers at every stage of the value chain to incorporate into their design that anticipation of sustainability, so that we as citizens and customers have affordable options, and it's not, and convenient options, and that it's not expecting us to completely deviate from the affordable and convenient choices that we have already been given to date and are accustomed to.
You kind of led me into a perfect segue for my next question, talking about conscious consumerism and, you know, just all of our buying habits. It's all of us. And okay, so Kate, I do some supplementary research as I prep for all of these interviews, and I found an article about you that really had my jaw on the floor, because I'm guilty and I'm getting better. And it certainly was not better in the pandemic. So, you know, everybody was online shopping, but I'm taking baby steps and I'm making it a point to support sustainable businesses and ethical supply chains, of course. But you took it one step further and you did a buy nothing year. And I have a million questions about that. I really do. Let's start with what constitutes a buy nothing year and what inspired you to be up for the challenge?
My buy nothing year, it was 2016. And I set some rules for myself. I started January 1st. It was in effect a New Year's resolution. And the rules were I could buy food and toiletries, but I could buy no objects, no clothing, no books, no cards. I could buy experiences though. And so it was really about this idea of bringing nothing into my home that was new, and really thinking about, do I already have everything that I need? And in particular, I think you see the impact of that depending on what your relationship is with fashion. I saw a big impact in terms of the clothing that I was buying and that I stopped buying. And I think what inspired me was that I noticed that I was spending a lot of time on my phone just flipping through things, whether it was looking at buying books or any number of things, or, you know, even going to flea markets or going to stores. It was about time. And I thought, what would happen if I just stopped this? And I'll confess that the documentary True Cost, I can't remember if it came out before my year or during my year, but it certainly bolstered my interest in stepping outside the system of consumption for a year. And I knew I needed to do it for a year because really many of us are addicted to buying things. It's linked to our identities that we have something that we show off in our house or we show off on our clothes. And to me, it took about 3 months to no longer have that impulse to go to my phone or turn into a store to see what was there. And what was one of the most amazing things about it is how much time it freed up. If you're not on your phone shopping, if you are going to the library instead of buying books online, or not that I don't want to support local bookstores, but I, you know, was using the library and I still do. And for gifts to people, not to give them things that they probably don't need and already have, but to give experiences. So for my husband's birthday, I booked us on a sailboat in Lower Manhattan that was a craft beer and lobster roll cruise around Lower Manhattan with a bunch of other people. And so I just had a wonderful year of time back. I saved a tremendous amount of money and it changed my life. Coming out of that, I do buy things now, but I only buy used things. And I will take the time, whether it's hours or, you know, sometimes it takes me a couple of weeks to do the research to identify what is the sustainable option and how do I find it used.
So how did you like set up a game plan? How did you approach and plan for a whole year of not buying anything new?
I did not have a game plan. And I'll tell you that by the end of a year, your shoes are pretty worn out and the elastic in your undergarments is pretty worn out. So it definitely, I was looking a little tattered by the end of the year, but there were things that I did. I went into the back of my closet, found clothes that I hadn't worn and took them to the tailor and turned dresses into shirts and did things so that it really never felt like I ever ran out of things to wear in my wardrobe. And that was a real wake-up call that this constant quest for novelty within buying clothes and the sort of link to seasons and to identity is an artificial construct. I know that's an obvious thing to say, but it was so liberating this year of not buying anything. It was beyond the idea of some sort of self-righteous sustainability goal. It was just absolutely liberating to not have that sort of consumption be such a huge part of my life.
It sounds super liberating. And it sounds like, you know, it was a successful year all in all, but like, was there a major challenge or big hurdles or at any point where you're just like, oh, I can't do it. I got to buy something.
I did. Yes. I had in the spring of that year, I didn't have a raincoat. I don't know how I'd gotten that far in my life without a raincoat. And so I went to a local thrift store and bought a used raincoat, which was against my rules during the buy nothing year. So I broke down and got a used raincoat.
Okay, you break down for a used raincoat. That's pretty good. What would you say the biggest lesson, the biggest takeaway you learned during that time?
You know, as part of my work in the circular economy, it's very personal to me. I really try to live my life according to the principles of circularity, and also being in this industry and reading about the realities of these invisible systems that run through our lives. The more you know, the less you want to bring into your house. And so I think for me, it's this idea of always asking, where did something come from and where will it go when I'm done with it? And if you have a buy nothing year, you don't really have to ask that question as much, because you're limiting what's coming into your life. You're limiting what you're putting into a landfill, because so little of what we consume is actually recovered. And I'm not just talking about single-use plastics. I'm talking about everything. I'm talking about the forgotten plastics, like textiles that we all wear every day, that we wear a couple times. Maybe we give them to Goodwill, and then we don't have to think about it anymore. And not think about the fact that that's probably going to a landfill or incinerated, depending on where you're sending it down the chain. And so I think that was part of the liberation of that year, and also just allowed me that pause for a year so that then for the rest of my life, I can have a mindfulness that's just unconscious, that's not challenging, that's not hard. It's just automatic, that I'm going to ask that question, where did this come from? Where will it go? Before I let any object come into my life.
You know, a buy nothing year is kind of on the more extreme end of the spectrum. And before we hop into our rapid fire game, I did want to know, what advice or what tips would you give to our listeners who are people that are trying to live more sustainably, but may not know exactly where to start?
I think the key thing is that there's a moment where we all feel like buying smarter is the right thing. And I think that's absolutely true. We have to be smart consumers. And it's not the case that everyone could have a buy nothing year. If you have a new baby, there's any number of reasons that, of course, people normally have to buy things. You don't have to buy new things, though. Really, in almost any circumstance, you don't have to buy new things. And so I think the takeaway would be that if you invest a little bit of time in the thoughtfulness to curate what you're bringing into your life, then you're not spending more time. You're just saving time on that kind of automatic knee-jerk buying that's not thoughtful, and that increases the way that you're contributing to the planet in a negative way. It's sort of, if you think about it, you know, if you go hiking in a national park, you of course are always going to take out with you what you brought in with you. And if you think about that in your everyday life, when you're at home in your own city, you're still in that national park. You're still contributing to and leaving sort of a path behind you. And so take it with you and bring less stuff. It's not that challenging and it feels amazing.
I love that. I do want to play our rapid fire game with you. Nothing scary. I'm just going to ask you 10 quick questions and you fire off the first thing that comes to your mind. You ready?
Okay.
Who is the last person that you texted?
Jenny Canther, my childhood friend from the time that I was in first grade.
What is your favorite thing to have for breakfast?
I have avocado on rye toast with a little bit of salt.
What does your morning routine look like?
I take my dog for a run on the beach and let her go in swimming a little bit.
What is one piece of advice you'd give to your younger self?
Don't be so shy.
What was the first concert that you ever went to?
Oh, this is embarrassing. It's the Steve something band.
Steve Miller Band?
Oh my God. Yes. The Steve Miller Band. Can you edit that part out of the podcast?
No.
Just kidding.
What is the one thing in the last year of the pandemic? What's the one thing that it taught you?
It taught me that I do need a lot of quiet.
If you could cast anyone to play you in the movie of your life, who would you cast as yourself and why?
Well, I think it would have to be Winona Ryder.
Oh, I can see that.
Because I grew up with Winona Ryder, and her comeback in Stranger Things was amazing. And so I think it would have to be her.
What is one eco-friendly, what's one habit that you do every day without fail? I mean, coming from someone who had a buy nothing year, it's probably a lot, but.
I don't know. I mean, what is one habit that I do every day that relates to eco-friendly? You know, it would be hard to say one. If you asked my husband that question, he would say that there are 20 and it drives him crazy.
What are you reading right now?
I'm reading Under a White Sky by Elizabeth Colbert. And it's about technologies and efforts to mitigate climate change that show how sometimes intervening in nature and all the unintended consequences that it causes, that when you try to undo that, you just exacerbate it.
And lastly, what does success mean to you?
Success means connecting with other people, connecting with new ideas, and not being isolated within fixed ideas. I think we need that sort of flexible connection if people are going to be able to face together a lot of the hard times to come.
You know, we're so lucky to have industry influencers like yourself to come on and tell your story, inspire our listeners, drop a ton of knowledge on all of us. And, you know, as we're in this unique phase now where the world's opening up again and stores and everything's opening up and buying things are at the forefront of a lot of people's decision making, I'll take away a lot from our conversation today, and I know that everyone else will too. Kate, thank you so much for inspiring all of us.
Well, thanks for having me. It was my pleasure.